Well, to another challenge to nationalist tendencies in Southeast Asia, where many of the countries share not just borders, but resources too. And one of the critical issues they face is how best to use those common and finite resources, sustainably and fairly. Southeast Asia's longest river, the Mekong, sits right at a pivot point. It flows through six countries, including Vietnam, where the river empties into the South China Sea through the Mekong Delta. Described by the man I'll introduce you to now, former American diplomat and Asia tragic David Brown, as a soggy plain the size of Switzerland, also known as the rice bowl of Vietnam, which gives you some impression of its importance. Today, the Mekong Delta, truly one of the world's great arteries, faces some wicked challenges, to be sure. The damaging effects of dams upriver in Laos and China, plus changes to sea level and rainfall precipitated by global warming. So there is a plan, the so-called Mekong Delta Plan, but as you'll hear, it's hardly top of mind with key decision makers, which is concerning. David Brown was first posted to Vietnam with the State Department back in 1965 and post-retirement chose to run an environmental education program in the north. His interests insist he keeps visiting, and he joined me earlier via Skype to outline why he wants many more of us to care about this issue.
Hello, Geraldine. Thanks for having me.
Now, would you just give us a pen picture of the Mekong for us? Just a lot of Australians will have travelled there, but you give us your sense of it, please.
Sure. It's a long river. It starts in Tibet and winds its way down through Yunnan province in southern China, where it emerges from this tremendous canyon to flatter country and swells with runoff from many rivers in Laos. And by the time it reaches Cambodia and Vietnam, it's hugely wide because the area is generally so rainy. It gets so much monsoon rain with a huge volume of water, which is very seasonal.
You say it's a highly engineered environment. What do you mean highly engineered?
But there's a very elaborate network of canals, dikes, and sluices that enable very precise water control. This has been built up over the last 100 years, but particularly since Vietnam was unified in 1975, and the new government, which was quite poor, set as its objective to rapidly increase the production of rice in the delta in quest of security of food supply. And they just kept doing it. And in fact, it was rice exports that got Vietnam a lot of the capital to then begin industrializing. Mm.
What sort of changes would you say this whole area, which has fascinated you for so long, what is it experiencing already? And what are the predictions for what might follow?
Well, they have got the place optimized now to grow rice, 2 and 3 crops a year. And that's turns out not to be really optimal for adapting to the expected impact of climate change and indeed also to the changes in the river's flow that are likely to result from building dams, a lot of dams across the main channel of the river upstream.
Yes, I mean, I noticed that you say in this very interesting piece you wrote that the Mekong's annual flood peak has fallen by a third since 2000, which is really an extraordinary fact. And average temperatures in the Mekong Delta, the suggestion is they'll rise more than 3 degrees Celsius towards the end of the century. So can you tell us about this Mekong Delta plan, which you've described as an adaptation and mitigation plan?
It was put together by a group of Vietnamese experts drawn from ministries which ordinarily don't get along very well, but fortunately, in a sense, moderated by some Dutch experts who've also had a lot of experience in holding back the sea. And it was the first attempt to look ahead 100 years and say, what's likely to happen and how can we adapt to this in a way that we don't make unnecessary mistakes? That's kind of code for, let's not just keep building dike after dike that gets overrun as the sea level rises.
Right.
And the plan that they came up with basically is a strategic retreat, which essentially concedes that the edges of the delta closest to the oceans are going to become, as the sea level rises by a meter or so, there's no point in trying to keep that as a place where you can grow rice. there's not going to be enough fresh water. There's going to be entirely too much salt water coming in. And if anybody needed convincing of that, they only had to look at the results of last winter's crop, which was blighted by the combination of drought, low water coming from upstream, and a lot of seawater intrusion. Additionally, the plan says, look, you've got to stop all this diking of the river, which allows all this good fresh water to flow out in a hurry, instead of going into aquifers where it can provide the fresh water we need year-round. So those are the key choices that need to be made, because it's a 90-degree turn from where they've been with drive to triple crop rice and just sort of maximize that at the expense of a more diversified cultivation product.
And you haven't actually mentioned, interestingly, the threat from the upstream dams, which the last time we covered this was with Milton Osborne, as I recall, and he sort of sketched the sheer drama of what was at stake and the fact that nobody in Southeast Asia seemed to be prepared, frankly, to look at it because China was involved.
I think the Vietnamese have recognized that there's not much they can do to turn around the Lao, who are charmed by the idea of becoming the battery of Southeast Asia and exporting electricity to their neighbors, chiefly Malaysia and Thailand. So basically, Vietnam has to adapt to a situation where the flow of water from upstream is going to have a lot less nutritional stuff in it, silt, basically. Mm. And it's going to be you won't have the annual flood pulse, which has been key to flushing out salt intrusion. But from a diplomatic perspective, it doesn't seem to be any way they can wind the Lao back. The Chinese have a lot of big investment in building these big dams. And if they're prepared to put the money, the investment behind them, you're not going to turn things around there.
And I just want to tell listeners that we're talking to David Brown, a former American diplomat first posted to Vietnam in 1965, and he regularly returns and is bringing us up to date on issues around water management in Southeast Asia, critical water management. I just should remind listeners that there are 7 dams already operating on the Lung Kang River, which is the Chinese portion of the Mekong, and 9 more are projected. One will start soon, just north of the Lao-Cambodian border. 9 more are projected, 7 in Laos and 2 in Cambodia. Tell me about the Mekong River Commission then, which it has a role, doesn't it, in monitoring and managing the use of the river. So how effective is it, David? Can it stop any further damming?
It was a good idea where the riparian states were going to consult and, you know, try to work things out. But when push came to shove, it didn't work so well. Lao listened very politely and said thank you very much, and then green-lighted the first of the big dam projects. I don't think that Cambodians will build the 2 dams that were proposed in there on their stretch of the river. And there's some question as to whether the funding is actually going to be found for the last 5. They've just broken ground for dam number 2. And already, according to some people I talked to, the amount of, you know, silt coming down the river has literally been halved.
So, I mean, obviously there are amazing politics here, because I think it was back in 2011, you remind me, Vietnam argued that construction should be deferred for 10 years pending further study of the downstream impacts. And actually that doesn't seem to have happened. But what's the likely effect then if this all does go ahead?
Well, there's been a lot of modeling done, and it seems inevitable that if the full dam cascade is built in Laos, that the annual flooding of the Great Lake in Cambodia, the Tonle Sap, is just going to stop. And that's a tremendously important aquifer, not only as a source, you know, feeding, producing protein and agricultural crops for Cambodia, but also for regulating the flow of fresh water into Vietnam's part of the Mekong Delta, spreading it out through the year rather than having it all happen at once and go right out to the sea. Then, of course, there's the problem of the interference with fish migratory patterns, which is more a Cambodian problem.
Look, finally, there was a change of leadership in Vietnam earlier this year, and I'm hoping we can look at that next week or the week after. Are you hopeful that there could be some progress now? Because we ought to add, before we leave, that a lot of the Vietnamese agriculture methods at the moment are also contributing to the challenges, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. This fixation on food security and to try to grow rice in places which really doesn't work very well, it won't stop. But already the government is redesignating a lot of so-called rice land as land for other purposes because it's become impossible to grow rice on it. Now, the new government is still sorting out its policy choices and where it wants to put its emphasis. In some public meetings, they have indicated that in general, the Mekong Delta plan that we talked about earlier is a viable roadmap, but doesn't convince me yet that they've done the political brokering among local people and the central planning authorities and the various ministries and so forth that will come up with a coherent plan. That's yet to be seen. What's going on in the Mekong Delta is, in a way, an early warning for the rest of us. There are low-lying agricultural areas all around the world, certainly southern Florida in the U.S. and other areas, where there's a lot that can be learned from what's happening in Vietnam's Mekong Delta about the ability of governments, of political systems, to adjust to a slow-moving disaster. And for that reason alone, it deserves to be watched very carefully.
Couldn't agree with you more, and we will attempt to do just that. So, David Brown, thank you again.
Well, indeed, Geraldine, it was a great pleasure to be with you all tonight.
That's David Brown, former US diplomat, keen Vietnam observer, who's written a series about the Mekong Delta for the online environmental daily, mongabay.com.